Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us again today. He's going to answer questions about your pets. Our Pets and Vets program is a popular one, so I suggest you call early if you have a question about your cat or your dog. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. You know, it's mainly cats and dogs here on the show. I'll be honest with you, if you have a pet deer or a pet squid, Ron Scharf will probably not be able to help you. But if you have a dog or a cat, I would say feel free to call 800-348-2551. Pets und Vets coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls is the venerable Dr. Ron Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell. Dr. Scharf has been practicing for over 90 years now, I think. He's a member and former president of the Capital District Veterinary Medical Society. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Be sure to call early. These lines tend to fill up very quickly on the Pets and Vets program. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. If you do email, try to be concise, but include the important info, the age and the sex of your pet and what's wrong. Don't make it in 9 paragraphs. Try to, you know, condense it. And voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. Dr. Ron Scharf, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ray. It's always great to come. It's never a dull moment here.
Really? Have you been enjoying our pregame conversation?
I always do.
I cut off the swearing as soon as the mic opens up. But someday I'm going to forget. And that's when Zach the engineer has the 8-second delay, right?
He'll bleep you out.
Or do I? How much do I have to pay him? All right, Zach. Well, I'll think about that. What's new with you, Dr. Scharf?
Well, veterinary practice continues to be good. It's still suffering from some of the after effects of the pandemic as far as waiting lists and, you know, people getting their animal in. A lot of people got pets during the pandemic.
Yes.
And those pets, inevitably, some of them get problems. And then you call for your vet, and it's nowhere near as bad as it was a couple of years ago. I mean, there were people calling all over creation. And it was so bad that some veterinary practices, when they got a new call for an appointment, they would get a credit card number at that phone call because a lot of people were not showing up because they were calling 8 other practices and, you know, deciding on the one closest to them or the one that they liked the voice the most or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it's nowhere near like that. But it's still a very difficult field as far as also finding people to work as far as veterinarians and veterinary technicians.
Yeah.
And it's brutal finding a veterinary technician, and it's extremely important, especially in New York State. So if you are vet tech, it is a seller's market.
All right. Well, without going on too much of a tangent and hijacking the show, why do you think there is a shortage of veterinary techs?
I think that's multifactorial. I think that there's a lot of stuff going on. I think that there's a lot of debt going on, and a lot of the remuneration is not anywhere near what it would be in the medical field for humans. But you know that going in. You do know that going in. That's true. That's true. But it gets more and more press. And also, compared to about, I don't know, I'd say maybe even as recently as 20, 25 years ago, there wasn't the tension, the angst in the field that there is these days. And there's a higher suicide rate, and it's a very difficult, what they call, work-life balance.
Yeah.
It's very tough to just leave work when you're a veterinarian. You know, you feel like you're dedicated to your patients, and to leave them and, you know, to get out at 5 o'clock or something is not as imperative as it is in a lot of other fields. That's still that's beginning to change. There are people coming into the field now that are more into the work-life balance, getting out on time. But it's a tough tension. It's an ever-present tension in that kind of way. Also, it's got a preponderance of women in the field, of women veterinarians. And I think that might also draw some bring up some challenges because women might become moms. They might need to take time off. And so there are various things going on. I'm sure I'm missing some of them offhand. As you say, we don't want to get into too much of a tangent. But it is much more challenging than it used to be, for
Interesting.
Sure.
Interesting. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today. We hear that across many fields.
Yeah.
And so we'll stop talking about that, and we'll start talking about dogs and cats. I did confirm with Dr. Scharf that if you have a pet squid, you're out of luck. The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll begin with Dennis in Saratoga. Dennis, you're up. Is he up? Is it working? There you are. Go ahead, Dennis. Yeah.
I have a cat, and she's 14 years old, and she's, like, stopped eating. We've taken her to the vet, and apparently there's something in her jaw. The vet said it was a mass, but it's hard to tell. And I was wondering if the vet had any insight into this.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, if there's a mass, and it could be a tumor, it doesn't have to be, but usually that's what you get in the jaw bone, that could have wide-ranging effects, not just locally in the mouth that it might be hard to eat, but also elsewhere in the body where certain chemicals are elaborated and might have an effect on causing nausea kind of thing. I would imagine if there was an x-ray taken that it shouldn't be that hard to tell. And it could also these days be sent to a radiologist who has way more experience than a general practitioner interpreting x-rays, but also put a needle into that mass. See what that needle looks like. Of course, a needle into bony tissue is a little more challenging, but it's doable. It's doable. Hopefully you get some material back that you can put under a microscope and find out what is this mass characterize as, and that could give you more of an answer, Dennis, to why the cat's not eating. I would imagine that blood work's been done and everything looks pretty hunky-dory with that.
Yes, well, the thing is, we had just taken her when she started on this, and she was, it's like she's afraid of the food. And then we gave her some appetite enhancement pills, and that seemed to work for a little bit, and now she just won't eat no matter what. I've been starting to give her another round of antibiotics. But the thing is, she's 14 years old. What is the quality of life? If she's got cancer, what's to do? I mean, well, is it worth it?
Dennis, I think, you're talking to a vet. Okay,
yeah.
Keep that in mind.
But
if she's afraid of the
cats, ages for generations.
Sure. Well, 14 years old is older, but it's not ancient. I mean, a lot of cats get to 16 and even beyond.
Yeah.
But if you're saying she seems afraid of the food, I'd wonder about teeth. I wonder about a dental disease.
Interesting.
And dental disease doesn't show up unless you take dental x-rays. X-rays, which are done more and more these days, many practices have dental x-ray machines nowadays. That could tell you if there's a bad periodontal or endodontic problem, because if there is, you take that tooth out and all of a sudden she's not afraid of eating anymore. It's just the mass thing that I don't know what that's happening. But you could also, Dennis, get an animal could get a tooth root abscess. And if you get a tooth root abscess, it's like any abscess. It's got pus, but it's enclosed within a bony cavity and it's building up more and more tension pressure, I should say. And sometimes it could build up so much pressure that it busts out.
Yikes.
And you see a hole under the eye where it looks like the animal's crying, but it's really a draining abscess. But sometimes it can't make it to the outside. It has no egress. And that is really painful. And that could make the animal very scared about eating. And an antibiotic might be good, but if it's any abscess that you cannot incise and allow drainage to happen, is an abscess that will usually not get better just on antibiotics.
So what do you do?
Pull the tooth.
Okay. Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us today on this edition of Pets and Vets. Louise writes in, could you recommend a website or source of info for making raw dog food at home, as well as a supplement to add to ensure complete nutrients for the dog? My small dog needs to lose some weight. That's from Louise.
So, Louise, whenever you talk to most veterinarians, you'll get a whole lot of caveats about the dangers, the potential dangers of feeding raw food to your animals, because they can get food poisoning, okay? And it could be really bad. Now, that having been said, whereas 30 years ago, I would be aghast when somebody would come in saying that they're feeding their animal raw food. Nowadays, I've seen it so much without that many horrible things happening that I am no longer slack-jawed when I hear it. But it is still a potential risk. So what I would do is go to the American College of Veterinary Nutritionists, ACVN. Look it up. Now, bear in mind, this is not the kind of place that everyone will be that rah-rah about feeding raw food to your animal.
Yeah.
But it is the place to go if you want to see about risks and that kind of thing. So as far as your particular situation, Louise, what was the reason that you were interested in the raw food?
Can you remind me? Say. The little dog needed to lose some weight was one thing.
Yeah, well, you don't lose weight just eating raw food. It doesn't matter how the food was cooked. It's the number of calories, the amount of calories going in. And what kind of treats are they getting? How much table scraps are they getting? So it's very easy for any veterinarian, doesn't have to be a nutritionist, to tell you how many calories any particular animal, dog, or cat ought to be getting in order to weigh what is considered to be the ideal weight. And then you just go from there and you see how many calories. If you look at a label on a pet food bag or can, it'll tell you how many calories. They're called kcals, which is shorthand for kilocalories. That's same as a calorie.
Right.
And it'll tell you how much is in the can, how much is in a cup of that dry food. And then you could just do some math, or have the veterinarian do some math. And whether it's on raw food or regular commercial processed food or canned food, that's the whole answer. It doesn't have to be raw food. I'm not saying don't feed raw food. I'm just saying it's immaterial what form of the food it's in.
Let's take a break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on this edition of Pets at Vets, and the number is 800-348-2551. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. We'll be back. Cyrus Chestnut, you ain't nothing but a hound dog here on Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets, and believe it or not, I didn't plan that. 800-348-2551. I plan the bumper music way in advance of the shows, and they're sort of random, which does get me into trouble from time to time. We did a medical Monday with a bariatric surgeon, and I didn't look at the sheet. The song was Baby Elephant Walk, and a lot of people complained. And I said, I'm sorry, it was a mea culpa. All right, let's go back to the phones here with Ron Scharf. Arissa in Middletown, you're on.
Hi. So about a week and a half ago, unfortunately, our family senior dog passed away. We have another old, and they've been friends since he was a puppy. And so since then, he's been acting strangely. Like, we think he's maybe grieving. He seems sad. He whines a little bit more. He spends more time in his crate. So my question is, how do we know if that's what it is? He did have a checkup recently. He's physically healthy. And how would we help a grieving dog?
So I'm very sorry, Arissa, to hear about your loss. It's always brutal when you lose a loved one, someone that many of us consider to be part of the family. The puppy situation, I'd like to know how old this puppy is and how old were they when you got them?
The puppy is 2 years old, a little over 2 years old now, and he was about 4 months old when we got him.
Okay. So when you got him, it sounds like he might have imprinted, not imprinted, what's the word? He might have... you know, when you consider the dog that is already in the family to be your mentor, your mom, your dad, whatever, whatever goes on inside a dog's brain.
Yeah.
And it's a major part of your life. And then all of a sudden they're gone. and they don't get insecure like we do. But I imagine that there is some emotional insecurity about what is life going to be like without my main individual still around. But a week and a half is not that long. It's my experience here is that most dogs do not grieve for that long. You will see dogs, you know, going from room to room, looking around. It'll go around for a couple of days, maybe a week or two. But I don't really think that they do it for week after week after week. I would just give it a few more days or a week or 2 weeks at the outside.
And what happens then, though?
Well, if it's then he might have a behavioral problem that you might have to talk to your vet or even a veterinary behaviorist about, because that's not... It's not normal to be going on for 2, 3, 4 weeks because you, as a dog, lost your main dog, your whatever, the incumbent dog, the parent dog, whatever. I don't think it would keep on going on, but if it did, I would definitely talk to your vet because, you know, maybe there is something physical going on.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. I'll make sure to give him lots of treats and extra cuddles.
There you go.
That's good.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551. Animal psychiatry is a thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and how can you do that?
You would be surprised. There's been a lot of work, a lot of research into it, and a lot of surveys, a lot of questionnaires. When you go for
questionnaires for the dogs?
Well, no, for their guardians, their moms and dads.
Yeah,
they give some of these behaviors. Give a 30-page behavioral questionnaire, literally, because how can they analyze the situation without knowing what the routine is, what the home is like, whether or not there are other dogs, whether or not, you know, there's neighbors that have animals that might be interacting with that dog or cat, and so it's. You know, when people come in for a behavioral problem, that is a long appointment.
Yeah.
That's a long appointment. And if they're coming in for their annual exam and you've already budgeted whatever, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then that comes up, you know, it's a very hard thing to compress something into 5 minutes. So it is something that oftentimes, if you're going to do it right, you schedule a session, and it's often, in my experience, an hour long, so you can get into the weeds, into the nitty-gritty, and find out all the things that are going on, because a lot of times people don't realize that there might be something going on that might be easily addressed.
Yeah,
because they haven't thought about it. They haven't gone through the algorithm, so to speak, and, you know, let's check physical stuff. Let's check environmental stuff. Let's check the house. Are there people that were in the house that are no longer in the house because they moved away because the animal was gotten at the same time that the kid was born and they grew up together and now the kid's, you know, old enough to go to college, or maybe they got the dog a little after the kid was born. But then that's a major thing when animals are left without their main person. And when I was practicing more often, it would not be unusual for me to have a sick dog brought in March or April or May, and the dog was old and the dog was sick, and the people would say, could you just keep this animal going until Christmas time until you know, graduation or until summertime, because that's when the kid comes back.
Right.
And it kind of breaks my heart even thinking about it right now.
Yeah,
about
don't cry.
The intensity.
We have another 35 minutes of the show.
I'm going to try to keep it together for you, Ray.
You know, we'll go right back to the phones. I apologize. 800-348-2551. In your estimation, Dr. Ron Scharf, a 1985 grad of Cornell, are cats more neurotic than dogs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, dogs are plenty neurotic. Don't get me wrong. But I wish that I could have, I wish that I knew you were going to ask that question, because I saw a cartoon the other day.
Yeah.
And the cartoon was animals in a waiting room for a dog psychiatrist, for a dog counselor, okay? And the waiting room was split between dogs and cats. And the dogs, there was like one dog there sitting at the waiting room reading a newspaper. And on the cat side, there was dozens of cats all like shaking and going like this and everything.
Yeah.
And climbing up the wall.
Right.
And it was like, now that's not totally the case.
Right.
That cats are accounting for 99% of neurotic or crazy or nervous behavior. There are plenty, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
I don't want to give dogs short shrift. There's plenty of dogs that are nervous and anxious and neurotic. We bring up our animals, dogs more so than cats, to be neurotic like us.
Well, speak for yourself. You know, but you don't want to know something? I saw a great cartoon of, I wish I knew who wrote it or even who showed it to me. It was within the last week, and I told my family, and there was great mirth. There's a, maybe it was just a saying, but it said, dogs have owners, cats have staff, which I thought was exactly the case. All right, let's go now to Troy, and we've done kibitzing here. Mary, you're on.
Hi. Actually, I'm going to let you go because the writing question from Louise was exactly my question.
Well, geez, you stayed on the hold. Why don't you say something to Ron?
Oh, no.
No?
Hi, Ron. No, I'll let go to the next caller. Thank you.
Hey, Mary, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. You know what? That's extremely polite. She could have hung up while we were chatting.
That's very sweet. She's probably on the phone for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, that was very nice of her. Okay, so now we'll go to Phil. It says Valagi. Where are you calling from, Phil?
Allison Moore Cup.
Okay.
What's getting?
Hi, Phil. How you doing? All right.
By the way.
Okay. Hello, okay. Phil. That doesn't sound like Phil, but it
can
might be.
Can you fit them in?
Okay, that's it. Ah, for Pete's sake. Let's go to Burlington, Vermont. No, Bennington, Vermont. Millie, you're on.
Yes, Millie. We had a Persian long hair, and she stopped eating. And come to find out, she had a hairball in her stomach.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Yes, that'll do it. That's a plug. That's an obstruction. And it could definitely cause a problem.
And so how would you, as without going to the vet, although you are a vet, I understand, but is there a way you can get rid of those at home? I see dry cat food, you know, hairball formula,
yes,
and this and that. What does it do? Does it have acid in it, or what is it?
No, it's not using acid. Way back for decades and decades, there was a product called Laxatone, which is for either a constipated cat. It's a laxative if you give enough, but it's also as good for hairballs because it was kind of like a molasses-y, kind of in a tube, kind of formula that you would give a dab into the cat's mouth, and it would lubricate that hairball that would facilitate its getting out of the stomach and going along through the intestine.
Yeah. Millie, you want to follow up?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. Well,
I would say about Millie is when you have a long-haired cat, they shed more, and they groom themselves a lot, and then they swallow that hair, and long-haired cats are way more prone to getting hairballs. So if you brush that cat often, then they're less likely to get the hairballs.
And this is the time of year.
They have less brush. They have less dethatching to do.
Yep.
So that's the way to go.
Good idea. Yeah. And Millie, thanks for the call. I hope you heard some of the answer. Let's go to North Adams. And Bill, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I had a question. My 19-year-old cat, Charlie, he's eating, but very lightly, and a couple of times in the past, we've had to use something to get his appetite going. Now it's more I just kind of rotate in all sorts of favorite smorgasbord choices for him, and he'll sample them, and he's always been a light cat, 6.5, 7 pounds.
Yeah.
But his mouth apparently was the problem a few times. They thought it's really bad in there. Years ago, we didn't know about dental things. Now we do. He's had shots a couple times in case he has a problem in his mouth. And again, he's 19, but he's a great guy. And I guess my question is there any way someone could do dental work at that point? He's always had a heart murmur since he was a little kitten that we adopted that was abandoned.
Mm.
And again, he's 19. I think maybe they're afraid if they put him under, he won't come back.
Right. So, Bill, that's an entirely appropriate concern. You are talking to I am a person who was a little bold despite advanced age. In other words, I try not to discriminate on the basis of age. If it's an old animal, if someone was interested and motivated and the animal was important enough to them, then there are ways to approach a geriatric or an advanced geriatric animal to try to fix problems. But the first thing you'd want to do is have that looked at and listened to by a cardiologist. Uh-huh. That cardiologist is the expert. Mm. They'll tell you whether or not this would be too much of a risk to use anesthesia, or more often that you should make sure that you don't use A, B, or C anesthetics and instead use these other ones that are much more forgiving, much more easier to deal with when you have a compromised cardiac situation. If the heart situation is far advanced, then there might not be a way to risk. But I'll also tell you, Bill, that sometimes, not often, but sometimes when an animal was very old, and I would say to the people, you know, this problem is causing too much of a quality of life problem, whether for the animal usually or even for the owners, you might want to consider doing something that requires anesthesia in an effort to try to fix the problem if you realize that it's a last-ditch attempt, that if you don't fix that problem, they're going to be either euthanized soon or succumb on their own by themselves. So it's like when it's framed in a way that you realize that it's not totally unlikely to have that anesthesia be what does them in, then it's easier to make the address the problem and make the choice, a difficult choice, that you might be able to get away with. You might be able to fix it, and then they pull through okay. So I've in my experience, had some pretty good experiences framing it like that, doing the procedure. Animal survives afterwards, and there's no problem afterwards. So it is possible, but there are other things to do. If it's a mouth problem, then sometimes antibiotics can help it because it could be a tooth infection. That might, and I think that you did say that you got some shots that help once or twice before. So you might be able to get away with just medical, but if you're not, then, you know, at 19, you know, how much more time does the animal have left anyway? You might as well decide that they've experienced too much discomfort and you want to remove their discomfort by euthanasia or by taking the risk of using anesthesia to remove their comfort and hopefully winning.
All right. Hey, Bill, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 if you have a pet question for Dr. Ron Scharf, who is here today on this edition of Pets and Vets. Let's grab one more before the next break. We'll check the email bag after that. Stanley is in Albany. Stanley?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question for the vet.
Okay.
My pup turned 5 years old, and the vet said that she's starting to put weight on. So what I've been doing is giving her chopped up chicken, turkey, or hamburger, like 2 tablespoons of a little water mixing her food. Is that fattening or is that be okay?
Well, it depends how you do that food, Stanley. If you boil the chicken or the turkey or the hamburger, the boiling allows you to skim the fat off the top, and then it's low fat, and it's going to be very good for losing weight. However, my bigger concern, Stanley, is that if you're just giving meat and water, then there's going to be a nutritional imbalance, and they're not getting a lot of the nutrients that they need. For instance, calcium. That's just one example of many that it would be not the best thing nutritionally unless it was a formulated diet that you could add other stuff in that would give them those other nutrients and minerals. I think, Stanley, what you just want to do, as I told the previous caller, just figure out how many calories that the animal needs to get if it is at an ideal weight. So
yeah,
you get your veterinarian to help you. You know, how much should this cat weigh? If it's 9 pounds.
It's a dog.
Then you give them enough calories for a 9-pound dog, cat. So
what the heck?
Dog.
I'm getting confused.
I do miss it with dry food.
Oh, that's good.
But
so
I
that's
will,
from the nutritional
yeah,
part.
I will check with my. Yeah.
There is
okay,
a Stanley.
Yeah,
there's a formula. There's a formula that just about every vet knows, and you just plug it in. You've come up with what you think is the ideal weight. You plug it into the formula. You get a number of calories. You look at labels on the food. The human food you're putting in, the chicken, the hamburger, the turkey, you would have to get what the calorie content is per ounce of boiled meat or even cooked meat.
All right. Hey, Stanley, thanks so much. Now, the dry food, though, that'll put on the weight, yeah?
No. The canned food is much more calorie dense because it's the dry food is filled with a lot of cereal and grain.
But doesn't that have carbs aplenty?
It does have carbs. It has carbs that they don't need. It has a lot of, you know, for most of the dog foods that are made, the kibbles have more cereal-type carbs than an animal needs.
Yeah.
If it has on its label meat as the first ingredient, that's a good thing. So okay. The food that I feed my own animals has, the dry food has meat as the first ingredient. But it depends because there's much more usable, biologically usable nutrition in canned food than dog food.
Yeah.
So a lot of the dry food is being pooped out.
Yeah.
Okay? A lot of the canned food, which is way... it's just way more biologically usable.
Right.
You feed much less. You don't have to feed as much. So you could gain on either way. So it depends. It depends on the food, too.
Okay, let's take a break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Yeah, love me some Allman Brothers. That's the Big Band of Brothers, the tribute to the Allman Stand Back here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number here on this edition of Pets and Vets with Dr. Ron Scharf. Dr. Scharf, I was complaining that the studio was too warm in the beginning of the show. Now it's cooling down to Mr. Freeze levels, right?
Yeah. Good.
Feeling pretty
comfortable.
Good. I'm well preserved now. I'll make it through the end of the show. Let's do a few emails. Matt writes in, I was wondering if you could help me with recommending a reasonable way to neuter a cat that was dropped off at my home. What the heck? I think you better take it to a vet. I found him at a couple weeks old in a box. I love him but cannot afford to get him fixed. It's so pricey. Well, that's a real legitimate issue. It's a one-year-old cat. But, I mean, you can't do it by yourself.
No, you call around to humane societies and to rescue groups, and they'll have less expensive ways to help you out.
Okay. This is from Nate. What fruit and vegetables are good for dogs to eat?
So most of them are good, except for some which are not good.
Okay.
And the not good ones is you never want to feed onions or garlic or anything in the onion family, scallions, that kind of thing. That could be very bad. And you don't want to feed grapes and raisins. That could be very bad.
Why?
Kidney disease.
Really?
I don't even know if we have the bottom line on. We've known about it for many years, and I don't even know that we know why the grapes or raisins cause in maybe 2% of dogs. I'm not talking about a lot, that they could cause kidney disease. So you definitely want to stay away from that, unless you're a gambler, because most dogs will not have that.
That's crazy. I mean, you know, wow. Does that happen to people too? No, with grapes and raisins?
Not that I know of.
That's odd.
You're asking the wrong person, though, for that.
That's true. Helen writes in, regarding the shortage of techs and vets, high schooler wants to work with animals. How can she start with summer work? Any ideas on that?
You volunteer at either a veterinary hospital or a humane society or a rescue group.
Well, that's a great idea.
And the more experience you have, the more qualifications you have to get your foot in the door at a veterinary hospital or somewhere else that you would get better, more and more exposure and learn more and more. And it's a very good thing to do because a lot of people want to become vets when they're a kid and they never really look into what that means, what it entails. And the people that don't have the experience just nurture that childhood dream. But then when they get some experience, they realize, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. And
yeah.
I've seen that before. I think there was even one person in my vet school class that decided that it wasn't for them.
Yeah. Well, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get that in radio, too. This is from Julie. I have a 2-year-old male beagle who's been with me about 6 months. I've noticed that when he walks at medium speed, he holds up his back leg. However, when he runs at full speed or when he walks slowly, he uses all four legs. And maybe interesting. Any ideas why only chooses to lift it when walking or trotting at a medium pace? He doesn't appear to have any visible injuries to the leg or sore spots on the pad of the foot. That is fascinating.
My assumption, Julie, is that there is a mild injury, a sprain or a strain, that is much more in the animal's consciousness when it's walking or running slowly than if it's tearing out at full speed ahead, because the sympathetic nervous system is kind of overriding its consciousness of that pain. That's my guess.
This is from John in Stockbridge. Ash is an 8-month-old cobber dog. He spends a lot of time in the woods and local streams, lakes, and rivers. He collects a lot of ticks. Are leptospirosis and Lyme vaccines recommended in the Berkshires?
Absolutely, and not just in the Berkshires. But lepto and Lyme are recommended for all dogs. And I was disabused of the notion way back when, I'm talking about 15 years ago, I thought that the lepto vaccine was basically for dogs that hunted, dogs that went into the woods a lot, dogs that swam in ponds. But I came to a lecture that we had with a veterinarian, that an immunologist, someone that knew everything about vaccines, that said that you see a higher incidence of leptospirosis in urban areas in smaller dogs. And I was saying, how could that be true? Because it's wildlife excreting it in the urine. And I was thinking that dogs in the woods and ponds were the ones getting more exposed. But in the cities, there are dumpsters. And in the dumpsters is vermin. And the vermin, these little critters, get into the dumpster, have a feast. They pee wherever they want. And then there are small dogs in the cities that might step in that pee and then lick that paw. So that leptospirosis is something that's transmissible to people. It's called a zoonotic disease. And I learned all those years ago that there's over 150 species of animals that can carry leptospirosis. So I do nowadays recommend all dogs get vaccinated against lepto and Lyme. We all of us know Lyme. That's tick-borne disease. Ticks are now a 12-month-a-year season. In other words, we recommend flea and tick control 12 months a year, and the Lyme vaccine is also good. I was not big on it when it first came out about 25 years ago, and I remember talking on this station, on this program, many times about it, but the vaccine has come a long way, and now I do recommend it way more than I ever did.
All right, one more email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one's from Susan. I have a 14-year-old dog who eats dirt all the time. He also has colitis and always has bloody bowel movements that he struggles to get out. What can I do? And that's from Susan.
Well, it would be good, Susan, if you could figure out why it always has colitis, because there are many types of colitis. There's many things that could cause it, and there are different approaches to what you do about it. Usually colitis, in which, by the way, you'll see mucus in the stool, like a KY jelly kind of thing, and some fresh blood sometimes, will respond, many of these cases, to just putting a fiber in the diet, such as bran or Metamucil or even pumpkin. That's a big one these days.
See that a lot at the pet stores. Yeah.
A lot of colitis. A lot of colitis.
No, I'm talking about pumpkin food. Oh, pumpkin. I see a lot of that. I was in there the other day.
Oh, it's great for colitis.
Yeah, okay.
Increase the fiber, and there are some medications that are very helpful with colitis as well.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today on this edition of Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Deborah is in Guilderland. Hello, Deborah.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a wonderful 5-year-old cat. 2 years ago, we adopted her from a foster mom who rescued her, and she came with all her shots and vaccines and such. The first few months she was here, she lived up to her name Heidi, as in we couldn't find her. But she's out now, and she'll play with me and my partner. And cuddle, et cetera. But do not pick her up or you will die.
Wow.
So how to get her to the vet? Our last attempt, we gave her rescue remedy, and we closed the exit doors and wrapped her in a towel before we put her in the carrier. And as soon as she was picked up, she went for my partner's face and left his cheeks bloody. So I've called around, like, how am I going to get her examined? Fortunately, she seems very healthy. If I can't get her to the vet.
So, Deborah, that is a very challenging problem, and it is a very common problem. And a lot of cats are like your Heidi, and there are certain ways you can do it. But what you want to keep in mind is that if you make any changes, such as taking the carrier out right before you need it, the cat gets sensitized. Uh-oh, something's going on. I'm going to make myself scarce.
No, we've been leaving it out and putting food in it.
Good. That's exactly, that's a good thing to do. What I would recommend is something a little less holistic than Rescue Remedy. I used to use Rescue Remedy very much. Now I just go for more convincing stuff, and that would be something such as gabapentin.
Uh-huh.
Gabapentin is a drug that was originally for humans, and it was originally an anti-epileptic, but now it's used in animals for its side effect of sedation. And what you could do, it comes in capsules, and you could open it, assuming that you can't get the capsule down the cat's throat, you can open up the capsule and hide that powder into peanut butter or tuna fish or whatever that cat happens to like a lot, and get them a little sedated from that. Now, what is often possible is to give it the night before so that there's a little residual still going on the following morning, so she might not have that much fear or anxiety. But if you could repeat it in the morning, preferably an hour and a half or two before the visit, because that's how long it takes to reach
the
peak.
Oh, so you say give it to her at night and the morning.
Well, at night if possible, but definitely in the morning. The one at night might facilitate giving it to her in the morning, but it's not absolutely essential. It is essential if you just give it 5 minutes before the visit. It's not going to really take effect until after the visit. So you're not really accomplishing much.
Is this over the counter?
No, no, it's a drug. It's a medication.
Okay, so I need a script. Okay.
Yeah, and there are other sedatives for cats, but that is the most commonly used these days, and it's a pretty gentle on the system.
This is very helpful.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Deborah, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest, and we go now to Troy. Deb, you're on.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Awesome. So I also have a cat that I adopted that doesn't want to come out of hiding. She very fortunately is sweet and doesn't scratch at you when I kind of force her out.
Yeah.
But you just said, can I give her gabapentin? Will that help her feel more comfortable? I've had her for about a month, and all she does is, and somewhere in the dark of night, eats, sleeps, and uses the litter box. But so I know she's doing those, like, she's okay and she's doing those things, but would adding gabapentin to her food drop her anxiety levels enough that she feels comfortable coming out?
It might, Deb, but it is not an appropriate use of the medication.
Wow.
Okay? You don't want to use it
for daily,
you know, let's get friends kind of strategies. You have to just give her time, and oftentimes it takes a long time. I have my own cat that was a rescue also. She was a stray. She was 3 months old when she was on my veterinary hospital property with two of her littermates, and we caught them, and I took one, and two of my employees took one each, and my cat was kind of like what you're describing, so much so that we decided to name her Nora, because she was only good as long as you ignored her. So it took that was 8 years ago. It is only now she hated my guts, like, ever since that day when she was 3 months old and I had to pick her up and, you know, do something to her that she didn't want me to do, that she's letting me now not only pet her, but when I pet her, I put my hand slyly, I inch it toward her belly, okay, and get her okay with mm-hmm. that. I've been doing this for months. Literally, I've been working on it for years. And then under the belly, about a half a year ago, I picked her up for a very brief, you know, blink of an eye second and put her down. And then I did it for 2 seconds. And then I just now in the last, I'd say, couple months, I could pick her up and she doesn't freak out and she lets me. And I'm petting her and she's purring. So I'm hoping that it's not going to take you 8 years to get your cat that.
Yeah.
But you could work on it. There are things that you could do. And it sounds like, is she always hiding except for in the middle of the night?
Yeah, she's always hiding. She doesn't freak out when I get her, if she's in like an accessible hiding spot. She doesn't freak out, but then she wants down and to go. But she's not at all mean. She's very sweet.
Well, that means you have some materials to work with, Deb. What you do is you pick her up for a very brief time, and then you give her a treat before you let her down. Okay, give her something that she really likes, like some kind of whatever it is, and let her associate being picked up with getting something good.
Yeah.
And then the more you do it, the more you're going to break down her defenses, but you can't rush it, Deb. You can't rush it. These cats, a lot of them are traumatized, and a lot of normal cats are traumatized, too.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to be patient.
All right, Deb, thanks a lot. Let's go quickly to Richard in, where are you calling from, Richard?
I'm calling from Shushan, which is near Cambridge at about 10 minutes from the Vermont border.
Gotcha. All right. You're on the air. You got a couple of minutes here, so go.
Yeah, we have a farm cat. It's about 14 years old. Eats in the morning, goes off hill and dale, comes back in the evening and eats, but it's not usually around the house. We were gone for 2 days, came back, didn't see it for a while, and then it arrived. It was limping, raising its rear right leg, and eating not a lot, staying close to the house, not going anywhere much, moving much more slowly. Casual exam, not too hard, didn't indicate any injury that we could see. Are we off to a vet, or is this something that will take care of itself, do you think?
Richard, how long ago did you say that was? When did you return from your two-day?
Just returned last week.
So it's going on a week.
We've had the cat now for 2.5-3 days in this condition.
Okay.
Okay, so it's only been 2 or 3 days. I'd give it another 5 days, and if it doesn't get better, have an X-ray taken.
Now, let me ask you a question, Doc. I've heard from vets that, if your cat is limping or whatever and you think it's not a major deal, you can give a little bit of human painkiller. Is it aspirin or ibuprofen you want to break up? And
I would never tell anyone to do that.
Really?
Because there is the possibility of it not being done the right way.
And well, very like a baby aspirin?
There is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that's made for cats that's got a label for cats. But you got to get it from a vet. Okay? You need a prescription for it. So that one would be safe. I would not advocate any other. Yes, there are one or two human medications of NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, that are okay to give a cat if given in the appropriate tiny amount.
Yeah.
But I would never say to do that because people might not give it in the tiny amount and get their cat real sick. So I would just get the one that's labeled for use in cats.
All right, Richard, we're going to have to leave it there, all right?
Thanks so much.
Appreciate
Good luck,
the call.
Richard.
Yep. All right, so Dr. Scharf, any more wisdom you want to lay on us here in the beginning of the warm weather months? We got about 20 seconds.
Well, it's all stuff that people have heard before, probably. Animals are going around more, are more prone to getting hit by cars or injured in woods like Richard's cat or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that the Lyme and Lepto from the previous caller is a great thing to protect your dog against. We don't have those vaccines for cats, but cats don't get, for the most part, those diseases.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to have flea and tick control for all animals, dogs and cats. And that is usually a once-a-month thing to do. It's either topical or it's given orally by mouth. And
your 20 seconds are up. Yeah. So you're on the. Hey, Dr. Ron Scharf, well done. Thank you for being here, sir. We'll see you this summer. Support comes from Pioneer Summer at New Paltz International International Piano Festival, directed by Vladimir Feltzman, with Daria Rabutkina, Alexander Korsancha, and faculty, July 8th to 26th, newpaltz.edu/piano. It's funny, the professional can't say the word piano. It's a new low. Also, Vision XL, Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. Thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf for joining us today. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff, your semi-professional announcer. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum, 2 p.m. We'll see you then.